Accession number 32386, Mr. Bill Shepherd, Reel 9. And what state was it in, this cable?
Well, I find this place in Port Salo, and I find a place on the beach where the Sicily end of the cable terminated in that little wooden, a little stone hut, that's right, a little stone house, which was locked, I remember. And I remember looking at this locked door and thinking, regretfully, I'll have to break this down so I can get out the cable to check it. When suddenly an old man turned up with the key. Where he came from, I never knew. But he bobbed up there with the key, and I got in. And I checked the cable was in perfect order.
It was still working.
Still working. And also, running from this hut back to Syracuse, which is about 80 miles away, was a pair of open wires and poles, you know. And I had to follow the open wire back overland and check it visually as I went, as I got back to Syracuse. And when I got back to Syracuse, I find then they were preparing to cut this cable that went to Tripoli. They were going to cut it and take the end, Sicily end, into Malta and connect it up to the Malta cable to Gibraltar. They would then be able to work from Sicily, Malta, Malta, Gibraltar, Gibraltar, UK. That was the plot. But gratefully, the Germans had retreated quite rapidly and had got beyond Naples by this time, heading northwards, so it wasn't necessary to have this set up.
So you didn't cut the cable?
So we didn't cut the cable. And I returned back to my unit and was recruited there.
You went back to Malta?
No, I went back to my unit 38TM, which by that time had got on to Sicily. They came in with 13 Corps.
Now, hang on, 38TM, was that your old unit
again?
That
my old unit, yes.
So you hadn't left them? With all these postings, you were still with them?
I was still officially with them, yes.
But you, not in fact?
Not in fact, I was... No.
Right, so you, oh dear, what, I don't know why.
Instruction to check this cable, through the cable, and check the overhead line, and find it all right. And what else was there? But I observed the absolute carnage of the airborne attack was terrible.
What did you see of it?
Lots of the gliders had fallen in the sea, gliders were wrecked on the beach, gliders were wrecked against objects on the ground as well. I can remember the names of the airborne gliders. The type of gliders was Hengist and Horsa. They were made of plywood and bicycle tubing, and if they hit anything, they just fell apart. So the airborne attack had very heavy casualties, very heavy casualties. So I got back to my base in Syracuse, and then I would give instructions to take a vehicle and take some linemen and go and join the Canadians who were making ready to attack Calabria in Italy. I was to join them and go to Italy with the first wave. And my job when I got to Italy was to get along to Reggio Calabria and speed up the reconnection of the submarine cables from Reggio Calabria to Sicily.
So tell me about that. What do you remember about that?
I remember sailing into Reggio up the streets and would see the total darkness in this Landingcraft troops in a vehicle, and it's absolutely quiet. And we moved up through the streets of Messina and then turned inwards to go ashore. And we had orders, load your vehicles, start engines. And we suddenly were grating on the beach, and the front doors fall down. Still not a shot being fired. So we roll up aboard and climb up to the main roadway along the promenade at Reggio. And there's the whole population of Reggio Calabria standing on there waving flags. It seemed that Italy had joined allies overnight.
This is in September 1943.
Would be that, yeah.
And what about the state of the under straight cable? Was it in a good nick?
Well,
that was your job, wasn't it?
My job was to repair the cable. That was why I went there. So I had help from a young Italian who in the post office at Reggio. Yeah, his name was Romeo or something, I remember. And Romeo showed me where the cable terminated in the post office basement, where it went under the promenade out to sea. And he also showed me where I might find a pair of bathing trunks, you see, because I'd have to go in the sea to get at this cable, which had been cut in the offshore. And he showed me this large hall filled with all the parcel traffic of the last week or so. But I couldn't find a pair of bathing trunks, so I had to be content with a pair of women's bloomers. Shirt bloomers with a big butterfly on the thigh, and I find that I was the only one in my crew who could swim. None of my men could swim, so I did the diving and connected to the cable a rope from a Canadian Army vehicle that was up on the promenade, which was a recovery vehicle with winches on and wires and ropes and all kinds of things. And with the help of this recovery vehicle, I managed to haul a fair chunk of the seaborne cables to Sicily, ashore into Italy, where my instructions were to terminate these cables and hand over to 13 Corps, which I did.
And were they working once pulled it out?
But when I had the end of one in my hand, I was taking off the insulation, you know, to fix it onto the terminal block. And I got a hell of a shock off this. And I thought, my God, I've got one of the mains, you see. But it was my second half who was ringing me up from Sicily. He was ringing up from Sicily to Reggio, a fellow named Drake. So I remember saying to Freddie Drake, come over tomorrow morning and bring a couple of lorries with you. Because I said to Freddie, there's lots of loot here, you see, all this place full of parcels. So Freddie takes my word for it, and arrived the following day with 2 3-ton lorries.
We're talking about when you got to Reggio Calabria, and you sent back some lorries for some looting. Well, if you see what I mean.
Friend Frederick came over from, arrived from Sicily in Calabria with 2 3-ton lorries and 4 of his Maltese linemen. And he just loaded the lorries and departed to take all the stuff into safe custody, you know. And I never saw him after that.
So you just took all these parcels from the post office?
They had everything. There was shoes, cutlery, crockery, fancy bread, biscuits, just the sort of things you send to a war front.
So what happened next? What's the next thing you remember?
I'm trying to remember. Oh yes, I decided I was now free of all responsibilities to 13 Corps and gave them the cable ends that had been cut. They could repair them themselves, and I still had a 1500 weight lorry and four men. So I thought I'd have a look at the rest of Italy, and I set up country, up the main road, and I got about 50 miles up before a dispatch rider caught up with me with orders to come back to Syracuse, you know. So rather grudgingly, I went back to Syracuse, and from there I was sent to Bari in Italy.
So you went all the way back to Sicily, and then you went all the way back to Syracuse.
Yeah.
And then who did they post you to at Bari?
They were starting a new company.
Now, which company was that?
You'll find it mentioned in a letter here. It's called Number One Underground Cable Company.
Now, this is a special thing, isn't it? Tell me about it.
A specialised company was to repair the main state telephone system of the Italians.
Now, so tell me about what was the Number One Underground Cable Company? What was it formed up of?
We sold the existing troops in Italy for British Post Office cable repairers and British Post Office cable jointers, and we formed a new company of these expert British cable repairers, and we started to repair the telephone cable from Bari across Italy to Route 6. We joined the cable coming up from Reggio Calabria. We joined it at a place called Atena. That's A-T-H-E-N-A. And it became one bigger cable. And it ran then all the way up through Italy, like a spinal cord.
As the troops advanced. Is it 43, 44, is it?
Oh, yes. It's hard to remember the passage of time, because so much was happening all the time. Now that's my problem, is to remember which year it was, you see.
I understand, yeah.
I remember Operation Torch, because it was a key date, really. 7th and 8th of November.
So tell me about repairing the Italian telephone system. What stories have you got about repairing the Italian telephone system? What happened?
Well, we had an allocation of transport came from the Americans for this completely new company, Number One Underground Cable Company. And we painted the backs of these trucks with a Royal Corps of Signals logo, which is a square, top half white and the bottom half blue, that's it. See, a square white and blue. Superimposed on that were the letters TS for Telefoni dello Stato. We were hoping to recruit the Italian people who would normally look after this cable.
Did you manage it?
Oh yeah, we recruited most of them. We paid them and fed them as well. Let's think of it. And the Italian state telephone cable was managed by a private enterprise. It wasn't managed by the Italian state. It was managed by a private enterprise company called the Società Italiana Rete Telefonica Interurbane. It was a limited company for the telephone network between cities. Literally, that's what the translation was. And so I remained with that company until the war ended. we slowly worked up up Italy, get it stalled at Monte Cassino for a whole winter at Monte Cassino, couldn't get past it.
Now tell me a bit more about your work. So what kind of work were you doing? You were working with this Italian firm then, were you?
We were with the Italian firm, it was cable repairmen from the British Post Office who were doing the repair work. And our chief of command was a fellow named George Keith, who had been an engineer when these cables were originally laid in Mussolini's time, you know. And of course, George Keith had been given the honorary rank of colonel. He was telling us what to do, where to find things, because he was there when it was built. Where are we?
Now, any stories about that last 2 years in Italy then? Just things that happened to you?
Oh yes, the long lines on this cable required special techniques of which I knew nothing really.
What do you mean? Explain that a bit more for us.
A telephone conductor buried it in the ground, it has two things. It has inductance in the cable and the capacity of the cable to earth. And these two physical factors affect the transmission of the varying currents in the wire. They cause distortion. And the whole idea of adding inductance, which is thought that the cable layers did, was to counteract the capacitance of the cable to earth and gave you a better reception over the average distances used every 50 miles or so. The cable loading would be done about every kilometre.
What do you mean by cable loading?
Inductances.
You put the inductor, yeah.
If the inductance equaled the capacitance, then the cable would act like an ordinary wire. There'd be no distortion, you see. What the Germans were doing, they were destroying the loading chambers. They were putting dynamite around the little loading chambers and cracking the cases. The cases were sealed against moisture.
So you'd have to repair that?
Well, we had to try and repair them by taking the loading cause and cannibalizing the inductances from the southern end of the cable, which had not been destroyed by the Germans. The Germans didn't start destroying these cables until we were about a place called Catanzaro, which is 100 miles up country. So by cannibalizing the untouched cables, we were able to build an adequate telephone line of half the size, of half the capacity.
Now, how did you get on with the Italians, the ones working for you?
Very well. The Italians were totally cooperative.
And did you learn Italian, you know?
Not there, but I took the trouble to learn Italian afterwards. As a matter of fact, I was very good at Italian. I was practically bilingual. I went to night school back in England.
But you liked the Italians?
Oh, yes. I went to Wimbledon Technical College a couple of years and I didn't speak at all.
Now, anything, any stories about your time in Italy, that just, you know, things that you remember?
We had a number of casualties. We lost one of our best Italian engineers, got killed in a motorcycle accident, a fellow called Bertelli, who became a very good friend of mine. He was killed by an American Negro driver driving a 3-ton lorry.
Anything else? Just stories you remember from that too. It seems to be about a year and a half, 2 years.
We were held up, where I said, for 6 months we were held up at Monte Cassino.
Anything you remember about that?
Oh, very, very a lot. I stayed in the amplifier station at a place called Bignano, camping out on the floor, and waiting for the Germans to retreat, but they didn't retreat. And eventually, I was there then working in close collaboration with Americans. One of my American colleagues came along and said, "Come on, Bill, let's go up the eastern side of the valley tomorrow morning and we'll see something of great interest." So we went up the eastern side of the valley, opposite Monte Cassino, across the valley, up high on the cliff. And my American friend said, "Now just let's sit and wait." So we sat and waited, looking at the Monte Cassino, the Avio Cassino, across the valley. And suddenly the whole thing disappeared in a cloud of smoke. And so look upwards, whole set of flying fortresses, like a set of minnows, and just bombed it.
So that you saw the actual bombing raid on the monastery?
Eh?
You saw the bombing raid on the monastery?
We saw the damage being done, yes. They wrecked the monastery.
Any other memories from that time?
I was up in the monastery the following day because the Germans retreated and the Polish army occupied the monastery. And the first thing the Polish army did was to build a small chapel in one of the courtyards in the monastery. They'd find a Madonna from somewhere, put the Madonna up in a little chapel. Yeah.
What else do you remember about your time in Italy?
I remember that. And we kept them going. Of course, the Germans contested every river we came through. Had quite a lot of heavy fighting at Monte Cassino. So a tank battle at Monte Cassino from a distance, of course. And then we moved further on, moved up to Siena, and we moved to Florence.
But nothing in particular you remember about that time?
I'm just, there was something. Engineers who had been responsible for the cable in better times, they joined us, as well as workmen.
What do you remember about them?
Well, they were very, very cooperative. Of course, our temporary Colonel George Keith, he knew them because he'd worked with them in peacetime, you see.
So what's next then?
We moved into this place called Atena, which is on Route 6. Made that a headquarters for a time.
Do you know how you spell Atena, or is it just like it
sounds? A-T-H-E-N-A. It's what they call a repeater station. It receives the signals as they get weaker and weaker, and revise them.
Did you set up that repeating?
We had a special section of our own that looks after that. Well, this time I had come off the cable work because it was beyond my ken. I didn't.
What do you mean beyond your ken?
I had no experience in cable balancing as it required on these very long lines. Because in fortress work, it's all fairly short lines, you see, and you didn't need to have any balancing.
So what were you put on now?
I became the colonel's right-hand man. I became his chief fixer. Because being the only...
Still with the number one underground cable company?
Yeah.
But you were, so what was your job, adjutant, or what were you?
I was the colonel's chief fixer. I was... If George Keith wanted anything done, he sent for Sheck, that was me, and told me what they wanted, and said, go get it. I did all sorts of jobs.
What kind of thing? Do you remember any examples?
Yes. We were having trouble laying this main telephone cable alongside the Italian railway line once the railway line was working, and it was giving us trouble because the earth currents for the railway were taking the shortest route through the cable armouring. And we're required to make some protection for this, and the colonel told me to find a foundry, which I did. I found a foundry, find some steel they can melt down and make these brackets, and I did that as well, using American scrap techniques, and we got that job done.